Oh, thank you. So Jerry called me not to tell any story. So, because he's such a nice guy, so I won't. But actually, he's at least responsible for one old paper of mine. And this was maybe the first time I realized that there exists a mathematician called Gerald Schwarz. And this was 15 years ago, maybe, plus minus something. I read this paper where he produced examples of non-linearizable actions on CN of reductive groups. And I was not very much surprised about that, but what surprised me was that this counterexample has been in terms of equivariant vector bundles. So I looked with, at that time, a student of mine, Frank Kutschebauch, at his papers, and it was somehow clear that these examples were trivial. So products of representation, but in the holomorphic category. So we thought about this, and then we came up with a general theorem, which is called equivariant Grout-Oker principle, which just says that in the holomorphic category, the K vector bundles, the K is the compact groups, or the K principal bundles, over Stein manifolds with K actions, that this category is the same as the category of continuous principal bundle over this space. And thank you for the paper. It was a good motivation. Okay, so today I'm going to talk about joint work with our birthday boy. So, in fact, I will report, hopefully, on four papers. Two are joint with Gerald Schwarz. One is a paper with Heinrich Stötzel, and one is the PhD of Petra Schützteller. All of them are related, and so let me just give first a setup. So during this talk, Z will denote a Kählerian manifold or space. Since I will not define what a Kählerian space is, I will stick to the case of a manifold. Second, U will be a compact Lie group. U C will be the complexification of it. And I will assume that U acts by isometries and extends to a holomorphic UC action on Z. Okay. So moreover, there is one more assumption, which is the assumption that the action is Hamiltonian, the action of the compact group U. So I assume there exists a moment map, which is a map from Z to the dual of the Lie algebra of U. Which by definition means, so let me give some definition. So mu xi for xi in U will denote the component of the moment map in the direction of xi. So the one condition is, or maybe the only condition, except for equivariance, which I wrote down, is that this function for each psi in U is a Hamiltonian function with respect to the Hamiltonian vector field psi xi. So if I denote by omega the Taylor structure, which is assumed to be U invariant because U acts by isometries, then the differential of this function is just contraction of the Taylor structure with respect to this vector field. So you can put it another way, just, and this will be more convenient during this talk, is that the gradient of the function, which makes sense because if you have the Taylor structure, then this is an imaginary part of the Hermitian form, which is closed, and then the real part gives you a Riemannian structure, so you can talk about the gradient, and this is just a vector field induced by I xi, so you are not in U, you are in IU, you take the induced vector field on Z, and that's the gradient. Okay? So, a rather simple definition. So let me give some examples. So maybe the first one is Z is V, a unitary representation. The Taylor structure is something like dd bar norm square, which is the standard symplectic structure on V equals Zn, which you immediately write down. And in this case, up to some constant, I'm not very good with these constants, is given by, you take the vector field, you apply it to Z, and take the unitary product with Z. So if you have a moment map on such as Z, you have a moment map on any complex UC invariant submanifold of Z, just by restriction. So that's one example. The second one is you take the example above and you look at the projective case, and then you again have a moment map and it's almost the same, but now you apply to homogeneous coordinates and you can define it by this moment map of just divide by the norm square of Z, and this is a moment map where omega in fact is given, induced by this potential. And which is, what it means is that downstairs you have a Fubini 2D matrix. Okay. So given this, you have a moment map on any UC invariant submanifold of this projective space. Okay, so the third example, which is quite interesting, and at least for me it was partially also the motivation for this work, is assume that Z is U homogeneous. So that's somehow the easiest example you can think of. But UC still acts. So what it means is that U is a coadjoint orbit. And by the way, usually I will identify it with U. Yeah. Okay. So that's the same thing as U being U Z being U homogeneous, plus the requirement that there exists a moment map the same as coadjoint orbit. And then the moment map is also stupid. So this is just the inclusion. Okay. looks not very interesting at the beginning, but it is interesting if you look at the moment map for subgroups of U, which then means that you take this moment map and then take the orthogonal projection on the Lie algebra of the subgroup. I will come to this later. Okay. So, since this talk is about reductive groups, real reductive groups, one shall at least give a definition, because it's not so clear what a reductive group is. And the assumption, you can't distinguish the diagonal real matrices from R. So you have to stick to some context, and the context, of course, here is given by UC, this group. So I will call these groups compatible. Which means we always fix UC, but we also fix U in this talk, which means that we fix a Cartan involution here, such that U is a fixed point set of this Cartan involution. And what it means is that you have a diffeomorphism or polar decomposition of your group, complex reductive group. And now if I take a subgroup of G, then G is called compatible if this is K with respect to this isomorphism K cross P, where K in fact is G intersected with U, and P is the Lie algebra of G intersected with IU. So the requirement is that this is an isomorphism. So one example is UC itself, trivially. Other examples are, which are important for us, are real forms of UC, such that they are fixed point sets of an anti-holomorphic involution which commutes with this given theta. But there are also other examples. For example, you take here a maximal subalgebra, usually called A in this talk, and then K is trivial and A is just this linear subspace of P. The corresponding group is just X of A, so it's the group which also will play a role during this talk. So whenever you have a compatible subgroup, then you can do the following. So you have on U space Z the given moment map mu, and now IP is a subspace of U, so you can restrict this moment map, so at every point to the subspace IP, you get a orthogonal projection if you identify U star with U onto IP star, and this is what I call the Cartan component of the moment map with respect to the given compactable subgroup. And in fact, it's this part of the moment map which somehow controls the action of G on Z. So maybe one remark, whenever you prove a general theorem about a compatible subgroup of UC, you prove in particular a theorem about UC. So in some sense, theorems about these kinds of groups are much more general than theorems about this kind of groups. Okay. So I will maybe remark a little bit on that, but that's not the primary case of interest. So, if you have such a situation, Any question? Remarks? So, whenever you have such a situation, then associated to this you have very important subsets of Z, or more generally on submanifolds of Z. So what I will do is I will fix a G invariant or G stable submanifold of Z during this whole talk. That will be fixed. And then, of course, you can take x equals to z. And whenever you have this, you have some very important sets associated to this. And one set is maybe the most important one is the set of semi-stable points. So let me first define this. So whenever you have a beta, let's say in the image of the Cartan component of the moment map, then let me denote by M of beta its fiber. And then this is in X. Yeah, I will restrict everything to X. Yeah. So the semi-stable points, by definition, is a saturation of the set, which consists of the point Z in X, such that if I take the closure of this orbit, then its intersection with this fiber is non-empty. Okay? The point here is that really what one is discussing is the G action on Z or on a submanifold X of G, which is G stable, together with the data given by the moment map. Okay? And this set depends, of course, on this moment map. So let me give one example. So let's look at C star equal UC, so G equals G, and just action by multiplication on CN, then, as you all know, the orbit picture is like this. Here you have a fixed point, and you have all of this. Take the standard symplectic form or Kähler form on Zn. This is that one I wrote down. And then you have moment maps, several ones with respect to this action. One is accidentally just the norm square of Z. But you have other ones. For example, you can subtract all constant, and this means that I'm working in the Lie algebra of the maximal compact of C star, which is R. Okay? So if you look at the semi-stable points, so you have to look at the zero fiber, which is a sphere. You look at the semi-stable point, you get Cn minus zero, and you see that more or less, if you look at the orbits inside the semi-stable points, you get the definition of a projective space, or the definition of Fubini-Sturi matrix. So you get from 1 to 2 somehow from this picture. Yeah, that's one example. Other example is if you drop this. So if you don't subtract something which is positive, then the zero level set is just the zero point, and the semi-stable point is everything. So semi-stable points vary, and they are really dependent on the choosing of the moment map. So now, in general, the first theorem, which looks maybe a little bit surprising, is the statement that the set where the semi-stable points at level beta, if I look at them, that this is open. So let me explain somehow the idea of the proof. The idea is, look at the function which is just the norm square of the Cartan component of the moment map. And then you just make a calculation, and you realize that the gradient of eta ip in the point z, or here z, is just, you take this point mu ip of z. This is an element in IP. You multiply with I, you get an element in P. And you have the vector field induced by this element in the Lie algebra and evaluated in Z. That's the direct calculation. What it means is that the flow of the gradient of eta ip is along P, which means along the G orbit. Okay, so it's everywhere tangent to the G orbit. Okay, and then the idea is to follow this flow and to end up in the level, zero level set. Okay, so do it for beta equals zero, follow the flow of the gradient eta ip. And for this, in order to see that this gives you openness of this semi-stable points at level zero, you need some ingredients. And one is you have to show a proposition which says that for all x in the fiber of zero, and I will just drop the zero from now, there exists a G-stable open neighborhood and an R bigger than zero, such that let's call this neighborhood omega. Omega intersected the points such that eta ip smaller than R is relatively compact in X. That's somehow the main proposition. What it means is the following. So here you have the zero level set. Here you pick some point X, and then you look at all orbits such that somehow, at least in the closure, they intersect this guy. So, yeah, but I didn't say how to flow. So it depends whether I go to infinity or to minus infinity. For you it's minus infinity, for me usually it was plus infinity, but you change every sign. Okay, so you have to flow in the right direction. So here if I write this, then minus minus infinity. Okay. So the statement that you find such a relatively compact neighborhood is that if you won't start here, you start flowing and you stay certainly in this set, but this is G stable, so you stay along the G orbits and you come closer and closer to the set, and in the limit, you don't know where it is, you get the critical point of this Gaussian flow. Okay? Then the lemma is, so let's call it W. There exists a W such that the only critical points of eta IP in W are mapped to zero. So the only critical point is really this set intersected W. So this is what you have to prove. And the proof of this proposition and of this lemma, in fact, uses one part of the next result in the special case. And the special case is that where you replace G with the maximal Abelian subspace X of P, so some part of a Cartan algebra. So this is what I'm going to explain next. I have forgotten, of course, to say this gives only the proof at beta equals zero. The general case is done by shifting, which you have really to introduce for this sort of group, and maybe I come to this at the end of the talk. So what the right shifting procedure in this context is. So for the part I'm now going to talk about is the Hilbert quotient. And what I understand here about the Hilbert quotient in this context. So usually Hilbert quotient has to do something with invariant functions. That's not the right concept here. Or at the end, it will be the right concept, but I will explain it at the end. But at the beginning, the right definition for a good quotient, in my opinion, is the following. So you start by considering two points in X, and you try to do the following. You say X1 is equivalent to X2 if and only if, oh, the best one would be, of course, this one. You get problems, so you replace it by this one, and you think about the first example which comes to your mind, and you still have problems, because what can happen is that you have one orbit here, maybe the closure contains one orbit here, you have another orbit whose closure contains this, but maybe also this. And then you have another orbit which closes it up here, and I don't know what. Okay? So all these points are equivalent or related to this point, all these points are related to this, but no point here is related to this. So what you have to have, if you are very optimistic, you should have such a picture. And then this will become an equivalence relation. Okay? So the theorem, oh, let's say a definition, if this is an equivalence relation, then I will just denote the quotient by x mod g. The theorem is the following. If x is equal to the semi-stable points with respect to g, and here I mean really beta equals 0, it's important, then first this guy exists, and second, and I'll make it very short, so maybe I should say, and parameterizes the closed G orbit inside the semi-stable points. And the second one is somehow the structure of the quotient is given by the level set of the moment map. Of course, this sits in X. Here I have the quotient with respect to G. Here, because the moment map was equivariant, this set is K invariant. And I have the ordinary quotient. G is closed here, which means that K is compact. And the statement is that this is equal topologically. Okay. So there are versions of these theorems somehow in very special cases. So for example, if X is the real G representation, then part one is maybe done to Luna. This part, again in the case of a representation, and the standard moment map is a theorem of Slodovy Richardson, where they proved exactly the statement. And in some sense, in both approach of Luna and also of Richardson, they choose a very special moment map and very special subsets, which we don't do. So the subsets they choose for this X in Z, where Z would be somehow, in their case, a complexification of this real representation, which means in this setting that these subspaces are Lagrangian subspaces, which means that the component of the moment map they consider here is just restriction. This moment map is just restriction of view. There is no projection at all. It's a much more special case than this one. And it's very important for us that we don't choose X to be a Lagrange submanifold. We really want to apply the theorem to Z. If you, yes and no. So if you take an affine variety, and you take an arbitrary omega and arbitrary mu, mu has nothing to do with kempfiness a priori. Only if you take as omega the standard Taylor structure which comes from the norm square, then it has to do with this. You see it already here on this example. You just shift this guy, and what you get is a completely different picture. Okay? In the case where X is a projective variety, and the Taylor form omega comes from an ample line bundle, then you are exactly in the setup of GIT. Okay? But in this case, in order to, such that omega comes from an ample line bundle, it has to be integral. So this is somehow a generalization of this setup. Okay. So it depends somehow on the situation on both sides. I mean, you see, if you are only interested in X and somehow the structure of the G orbit, you are free to choose this guy. But here, the question is more how these two are related. That's the case if everything is real analytic. And otherwise, I don't know. It's always the case if G is equal UC. Then it's always a refract, because then locally you have normal forms around this set. And then you can choose U invariantly coordinates, such differentiable coordinates, such that the moment map mu becomes real analytic. But I don't see any way to show this in general for real form. So, but if everything is real analytic, then you can prove it. And essentially, the same proof works. Yeah. Okay. So, we discussed just the example of a representation, so let me give another one. And for this, you have to work a little bit. But I just will state what's going on in this case. So take Z to be a coadjoint orbit. That's the example I was talking about. And assume that G is a real form of UC, and maybe I should explain a little bit how this is a Kähler space. So this is a coadjoint orbit, which means that you have a Kähler structure on it such that the moment map is given by the inclusion, and of course, because the complex manifold is compact, you can integrate all vector fields coming from the complexified D algebra. So UC acts on it, and of course transitively, so this is UC mod parabolic. Okay. That's the complex structure here. And now if you look at the real form of U, so on the Lie algebra level, this is K plus P, and U is K plus I P. And then it is known that G has only finitely many orbits, by the way, not only G, also KC, and in this case, it can happen that the semi-stable points as stated in the theorems are empty. Yeah? I will assume they are non-empty. I will come, hopefully, to the empty case later. So assume that beta is in K, which means that the projection here from K to I pi is zero. So beta is in the zero level set. Okay? Then what you get, this is a union of G orbits, of course, a G invariant, such that G times Z is open. So you get all open G orbits. You can calculate mu IP. So this is a union, of course, of K orbits. But these are very special K orbits. These are exactly the K orbits which are equal to KC orbits. So, in other way around, this one is a set of open, so the quotient here with respect to G is a set of open G orbits. So, here you have just the ordinary quotient. And this set is a set of compact KC orbits. Okay. So this is somehow one part of what is called Matsuki duality, which says that G orbits are one-to-one, are in one-to-one correspondence with KC orbits, such that the KC orbits intersecting the G orbit is compact. That's what comes out in this example.
So the P is just one of finite dimensions.
Yeah. In particular, you see, which is somehow really in contrast to the usual cases where G is UC, is that this guy is highly non-connected. So a typical example would be the case of SU2. You take any real form you like, so SL2R or SU11, they are the same. The orbits are just the upper half sphere and the lower half sphere, and this guy here in the middle. Here, north and south, you get mu IP, and the semi-stable point is a disjoint union, so it's a sphere with the equator removed. In this Okay, in this situation, I will make this short. You have also slices, so slices in the sense of Luna, if you want. So the context here is the following. Let X be in the zero level set, then it follows more or less from the definition that the isotropy is of this form, where this means the K isotropy group, and this means the vector field in P, which vanishes in X, which means that the isotropy in this point is compatible with the Cartan decomposition, which means that the isotropy representation on the tangent space in each point is completely reducible. So what you do is you take the tangent space in X, you split it in the tangent space to the G orbit in some normal direction, and then the theorem, the slice theorem, tells you the following. There exists a GX table open So Gx acts here on this normal space by linear representation. And here I assume that X is smooth, but the slice theorem is valid in any case, but it's more complicated to stay. So there exists a Gx stable open neighborhood, call it S, of 0 in N, and a G equivariant open embedding, call it psi, from the bundle over associated with the principal bundle G goes to G mod GX over S to X, such that this guy maps the point 0 to X. So that's part A. And part B is that everything can be arranged such that it is compatible with respect to the quotient. So B, GS is contained in the semi-stable points here and is saturated with respect to the quotient. So that's the version of Luna's Lie theorem. And in fact, what you have is you have slices at every, so here you have to really to take, otherwise the whole theorem here is wrong, you really have to take a special points, these points which are going through the zero level set. You can generalize a little bit. You can take here points which does not go to zero level set, but to points which are fixed, but with respect to the U action. Not zero, beta is fixed to the, for life in the center of U star. That's, then you get the same theorem just by changing the moment map by something invariant. But what it means is that you have slices at every point in X, but not with respect to the group G, but to centralizers of the corresponding groups. So you take any point X. Now, in X, you define its image, beta, to be just the image. And now you take psi equals I beta, so you end up in P. And then you discuss the group, which is a centralizer of this guy considered as a point in G. And then, of course, this psi here is somehow is fixed with respect to the action of this group, and this gives you slices. At X. Okay. So, for example, if the group here is commutative, you have slices everywhere inside the corresponding semi-stable points. Okay, this is used in order to prove in this context, a stratification result, which in the case where G is UC is, maybe some people here know, is a Kerwin stratification of the Kähler manifold. And this stratification is used in this PhD thesis of Schütz-Deller in order to prove a convexity theorem for the moment map. This for this IP component. Compact? No. What was the question? I didn't say.
You didn't say classification.
Nein. Convexity theorems.
No, you said you used the classification.
No, this stratification, sorry. This is what I'm going to explain now. Okay. So, assume. X now to be compact. And then consider again this function moment norm square. And then somehow the theorem is there exists a stratification which of X into G stable submanifolds given by the this is not a Morse function, so I make it in quotes. And the function you deal with is eta IP. So you look at the critical points of eta I pi. You look at points which, such as the gradient flow, flows to the critical point. You get a decomposition of the manifold. You get strata, and that's the theorem, not very precisely stated. So let me explain a little bit how the strata look like. So somehow, okay, so as I said before, there's a proof of Kerwin in her book in the case where G is equals to UC. And so quite naturally, many statements and theorems she proved go over to this case. You have to replace, for example, openness or something like this by semi-stable to respect to G and in this context. But somehow we decided, so Jerry and I decided, or I don't know who decided, that we have to So we choose somehow a strategy the other way around. So we first define the strata in other terms and then at the end proved that these are the strata given by the gradient flow of eta IP. Kerwin, Francis Kerwin. So the construction is like the is the following. So introduce sets beta IP equal critical points of this map denote by CIP its image so styles away and then if you take a beta in this a critical value of this norm function, then I always will denote the corresponding point in P by psi, and then consider the set of points which are fixed with respect to this one parameter group. Is this? You have this point. And then, so how does it look like? So first of all, if you want, because of the slice theorem, this set is smooth, and you have the action of the one parameter group corresponding to this psi. So here you have a fixed point, and with respect to the one parameter group, you can distinguish the plus weights and the minus weights of this action given by this psi. Okay? And then what it means is that over the fixed point set, you have a normal bundle in this plus direction with this fiber, and also one in this minus direction and some hyperbolicity in between. Okay? So now, in this set, you have some special sets where this moment map component in the direction of beta equal minus I xi takes a fixed value. This function, because of this gradient condition, this is locally constant of the fixed point set. So you decompose the fixed point set into components such that the moment map component in direction of beta is constant. And you calculate what the value is, and it's exactly norm of beta square. So these are the values you want, if you want, of the norm square of the moment map. And then in this set is contained the set, so this is fixed with respect to psi. So the centralizer of psi in G acts on the set, and this centralizer gives you the set of semi-stable points with respect to the centralizer which sits in it. So I denote it by index psi. So now the corresponding moment map with respect to the centralizer, and now I have here something like this. This is semi-stable points with respect to this. And the strata is given by something I call S beta plus, which is a set of Z in X such that the limit T goes to minus infinity X T psi times Z ends up, I don't know, how can I call it? Let's call it X psi 0. Okay? So this is, in this picture, you have the fixed point set with respect to psi. Here you have 0 of the shifted moment map with respect to this fixed beta, with respect to the centralizer. Here in this set, you take semi-stable points with respect to the centralizer, and then you look at all these points such that from this plus direction, they go into it. Okay. And the slices are given by G is beta plus. This is a decomposition, and the strata are given by G times this strata. That's the Kerwin decomposition. And what it means is that the whole manifold X is a disjoint union of these guys where you have to parameterize beta by k orbits. So, which means that you choose beta to be in a positive Weyl chamber with respect to the K action on P. That's the stratification. And let me at least stay somehow a result which uses this kind of stuff. And the motivation of this was in fact an old result of Constant. So what he proved is two things in his, so this is somehow where all this business about convexity of moment map started. So Constant proved it in the case of coadjoint orbits, and he proved it for respect to the group G, which was maximal abelian, in so for example for a compact group, for maximal compact Cartan subalgebra. But he proved another theorem which was related to exactly real forms. So what he did is he took a Cartan decomposition G equals K plus P. And what he considers here is the point beta in P and the orbit K beta through this point beta. And he proves that if you project this onto a maximal abelian subspace A, then the image is given by the convex hull of the Weyl group of this guy. But if you look at the conjoint orbit through this corresponding point in IP of U, then you have the K orbit, but in fact this K orbit is a unique closed G orbit. And this is your X, you apply it, and then the statement can be somehow translated to the statement that the image of the mu I A moment map is convex. That's Schütz-Deleuze's thesis. And I make somehow, I don't give the best possible theorem, but one which is correct. So if Y, I mean, there's a very nice theorem which is completely general, but under some assumption, and the assumption has to be verified. And you verify this assumption in the case where everything is almost algebraic. It's a density assumption, and the density comes from something which is Starisky open in its closure. Okay? But the theorem is general. I stay just a corollary. So if Y in a projective space, as in the example above, is G stable closed semi-algebraic, so this guy is real, and you need some irreducibilities, otherwise you don't have convexity. And by this I mean here just I take the Starisky closure over the reals and it should be irreducible. The algebraic Starisky closure over the real. Then you take the image of this guy, intersect it with A, and take a positive Weyl chamber in this A, and this is convex. Thank you.